Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts had to be trained to be less aggressive on the street. The other one avoids eye contact at all costs. Actually, that sounds like a pretty typical sports radio pairing. Anyways, I am joined on this chilly Wednesday by my colleague, good friend, Chris Sproul. Chris is sort of the, I don't want to say president, maybe like prime minister of all things NFL at ESPN. Chris, how would you describe your role?
Secretary of the Interior.
Secretary of Interior. Kind of like a behind the scenes, guy. But you're probably one of the most knowledgeable NFL people I know here. Definitely someone I bounce ideas off of a lot. So I figured you'd be good on this very pivotal. This is the end. We're getting finally to the end. This is sort of like the end of a murder mystery where the red herrings have been dispensed with. That's the Bears in this analogy. And we finally kind of think we know who did it. Yes, I just finished True Detective. Love to talk about my theories, but that's for another podcast. Are you watching True Detective?
I'm about to crank it up.
Ooh, it's really, excited. It's a return to form. It's a return to form. Did you watch seasons one and two?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's a very season one-ish. Anyways, we're going to find out if the murderer is New England. It's probably New England. Kansas City, the Rams and the Saints. And before we get into the games, I guess just listing all of those teams, Chris, like what, how does that strike you that this is the final four?
Well, the red herring in this case, obviously defense. We have the four highest scoring teams in the NFL. The irony of which being that all of these teams at least have, in a couple cases, have some capability of creating points from the defensive side of the ball. The game that kind of defined this NFL season was the Monday Night Football Rams-Chiefs game. And we talked about the point totals in that game, and we kind of overlooked the fact that the defense scored some of those points. So I think that's kind of an interesting aspect of these games. Yes, these teams are capable of scoring points, but they have these – there are – points to be found on the defensive side of the ball in each of these games too, and that could add up.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to sort of the changing nature of team building in the NFL, right? Which is when you go all in on offense and when the offense is the focus on the team, what can your defense look like? Because none of these teams have elite defenses by any means. And I don't have the rankings in front of me, but they are, oh, you know, like here's, this is an interesting, the ranks defensively on early downs, the Rams are 11th, the Saints are 12th, so they're the better, the Patriots are 13th, and then the Chiefs are 28th. So they're not terrible, but not great. But I think your point about scoring is really good, because after that Monday night game, I remember we talked a lot about the death of defense, and there was this counter, well, actually, you know, a lot of the points were scored by the defense, and I think that speaks to more of the nature of the defense, which is something we certainly saw with the Chiefs, but also with the Rams, you know, having these attacking, aggressive units that are really going to just try to get a couple of turnovers in the game rather than, you know, winning down to down. Another ranking that struck me about the four teams, this is from Evan Silva. He ranked them by Football Outsiders offensive line pass pro metric. So we've got the Patriots at one, the Saints at three, the Chiefs at five, and the Rams at six. So that's seems
looks
to be
a lot
another
like the scoring
way.
Offenses, yep.
Yeah, to build championship teams. And I guess, you know, just to kind of talk about the Bears briefly and sort of the red herring. Who's the red herring? Well, you haven't watched True Detective. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but I have some of my theories
Come
about
Throw me
who the red herring. I know. I won't ruin it. But do you think that, I guess, before we get to the game, is that sort of this conclusion will drive decisions made in the offseason and perhaps even the draft?
Well, in terms of how good the Bears were or the fact that the Bears aren't here?
The fact that the Bears aren't here. The fact that these four teams all have kind of a similar and the other thing I want to throw in, by the way, is, and I tweeted this, this is a murderer's row of coaches. These are arguably the four best coaches in the NFL.
If you had a coach's draft, you might end up with these four.
Yeah. Yeah,
sorry, Pete
completely. I mean, who else would be, I mean,
I would put Pete after the way this season has gone, not to take this pod in a completely different direction, but this was a Seahawks regression season, and I know you and I both follow that team closely, Washington shout out, but you know, you had a regression season and you went 10-6 in a rebuild. I think you're a pretty good coach.
So all it takes to get to the Final Four is to have a Hall of Fame-ish coach, an incredible offensive line, and a top defense. Easy. We're going to go in reverse order today rather than going in chronological order. I wanted to start by talking about two teams that again, ranking those top metrics in both categories. So I, listen, we've been using Jay Cutler as the Sounders. He's been great. It's not like he's very busy during the off season, but I've enjoyed doing it myself. So I actually made an executive decision and fired him, and I'm going to introduce the game. Chris, I'm sorry in advance for this.
Patriots at Chiefs.
All right. So I want to give you a bunch of statistics, and I want to tell me what you think about them on the Patriots and the Chiefs. So you actually, you texted me this for the game. Tom Brady's 25-6 at home in the playoffs, 3-4 on the road. Pretty stark, I would say.
25-6 home plus neutral. So he's actually 20-3 at home and 3-4 in true road games. If you just throw out the Super Bowl. So you're talking about a guy that's played 23 home games, 7 road games, and has lost more games on the road than he's lost at home. That's, it's astonishing, really.
So here's some statistics from this season. The Patriots, defense has allowed 16.63 points per game at home, 24 on the road. The Brady's completion percentage is 5 points lower on the road. Opposing quarterbacks have posted a QBR of 38.9 in Foxborough, 71 on the road. It's going to be a very freezing, the Arctic freeze is what they're calling this game. Tom Brady is 5-1 in sub 20 degree weather. And one more statistic, the Chiefs defense, and this is Football Outsiders DVOA, is 30th on the road, 12th at home. So you've got all of these statistics, I think, would kind of favor the Chiefs. Do you think they really matter in this game?
I actually think they do. We like to do this thing where we say, well, it's Belichick and Brady. That transcends home road, except for the fact that it doesn't when you just pull up any basic statistics. They were 3-5 on the road this season. You know, you're part of the reason that the Patriots have always had really good home records is they've always invited the AFC East there for a minimum of 3 games every season. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think you could say, okay, that's just this one season. But then you go historically, this is a pairing that's played in 38 playoff games. They're 3-4 on the road. The idea that there's coaches and quarterbacks that transcend the home road splits in the NFL, which are pervasive till the end of time, is just a fallacy. It is a more difficult place to play for the New England Patriots. And that's just a fact. You know, and again, Brady's 5-1 in these cold weather games. Well, they've been played in New England or probably Buffalo. So these are not things you expect. Again, this isn't like some knock on the Patriots. It's a knock on the idea that the Patriots, again, are immune to things that other NFL teams aren't immune to. The Patriots are a great home team in the playoffs, which home teams in the playoffs are, and they struggle on the road in the playoffs, which road teams do. That's just a fact. And again, it's not a knock on them. It's the reason why the Kansas City Chiefs are favored in this game. FPI, Vegas, whatever advanced metric you want to look at says these teams are reasonably even, and yet we have two favorites. Those favorites are basically right now being dictated by about a 2.5 to 3.5 point spread that's baked into home teams. So that's where we are.
I think for me, the reason why the home statistics really kind of sway my thinking is that the Chiefs defense has been so, it's less about the Patriots and more about the Chiefs.
Yes.
And that their defense has been so much better at home. However, watching what New England did to that Chargers defense, basically Bill Belichick pantsed Gus Bradley in front of the world. And some of that is a little bit unfair. Like, you know, there was this sort of rhetoric after the game. Oh, how could the Chargers come out with the same game plan that they did against Lamar Jackson and company, you know, the extra DBs going small. Well, that's their personnel, right? They don't really, like, some of that was the game plan, but a lot of it was, and they've played zone all season. Again, you can criticize them for not making adjustments until the second half, and we should, but some of that is just, that's the team they had. And watching what that offense, the New England offense, did to that defense, it made me a little bit concern, Chris, for the Patriots offense versus Chiefs defense matchup, because As great as the Chiefs run defense, as much as better as they have looked over the last two games of the season, I think a lot of that was the product of circumstance. I think the Colts fell behind early against Kansas City and abandoned the run pretty quickly with Marlon Mack. And so, cause after that game, we were saying, wow, how could the Chiefs defense really want it? What a shocker. Well, they kind of played to their advantage really early. And I don't think New England's going to do that.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, there's a thing about the Chiefs though. This is one of those games where I wouldn't completely throw out the first matchup, but the Chiefs defense has been a lot better over the second half of the season. So right now, you and I are, you know, we use DVOA from Football Outsiders. The Chiefs right now are 26th in defense over the course of the season. Ah, but weighted defense. So basically, how have they been playing recently? They're 16th. This is to say, and I said it earlier in the season, this is arguably the worst defense in the NFL. They just aren't right now. They've gotten their pass rush going. The Chiefs defense, here's a stat, Mina, had 41 sacks when they used just a standard four-man pass rush during the regular season. That's the
most by
any defense in the last 10 seasons. Basically, the Chiefs are really, really good at getting to opposing quarterbacks when they don't use an extra man. Why is that important? That is Brady kryptonite.
Yeah.
I mean, that has basically been the number one thing that has thwarted Tom Brady. And I think, you know, the emergence of Chris Jones, who basically looked like an all-pro player, mostly over the second half of the season when he went on his sack run. Dee Ford healthy, ask Andrew Luck about him. Houston giving them just enough. That is a difficult front four. And I think that's really the big thing. So, you know, to your point, yeah, I mean, I think that the Chiefs are obviously vulnerable to the rush. I don't know if they're vulnerable to the rush in the way that the Chargers were, where you could say the Chargers versus the Ravens was the Chargers. Oh, this was really dynamic and they were kind of showing their hand, or dynamic that they basically on a base dime defense. But, you know, we saw what happens when you have really good coaches with 2 weeks to prepare. I mean, Andy Reid's been phenomenal over the course of his career off bye weeks. Bill Belichick, these are really, really good coaches, really, really good coordinators, and they had that time, and the Patriots found ways to beat the Chargers. So, I don't know. I guess, yes, absolutely, the New England's going to want to run the ball, especially because Rob Gronkowski right now perhaps has more value in the run game than he does in the pass game. But I don't know if the Chiefs are totally vulnerable in the same way we would have thought of them in September.
I think that's fair, and it is really, you know, two teams really trying to play two different games, and which is why we might know kind of early on, like, who's won that battle, right? Because I think of that first Patriots drive, that was just so grindy against the, like, that's the dream Patriots drive right now.
Hashtag you know, grindy.
Let's maybe put a pin in that one. But, you know, the Patriots go, they go super heavy, and that's not, like, that's a problem for New England. They're the NFL's worst defense facing 21 personnel, which the Patriots love to run. The Patriots have the second highest usage of 21. So, but your point about the pass rush is so important. And it's funny because I remember the Super Bowl last year, and I think I said, you got to rush Brady with four, like, so many. The thing about the Super Bowl is we talk about the same game for so long, you just start saying the same things over and over. But it's, you know, an aphorism because it's true at this point with Brady. And New England, or the Kansas City, rather, might be the team left in the playoffs that's best equipped to do that because of the sheer amount of talent they have on that front floor. You talked about Chris Jones, Dee Ford, and it was interesting in the Chargers game, Chris, they didn't really blitz that much. This Chiefs defense doesn't have to blitz. They can get pressure with, you know, just stunts and those guys just leaning on their talent alone. And that, again, this is going to be them wanting to do one thing. It sounds like a really obvious thing. The Patriots wanting to do something else. And we might have a sense early on whether the Chiefs are able to do what they want on that side of ball. On the other side of the ball, it was interesting that the Chiefs, you know, in their divisional round game, the offense, you know, they didn't really look dominant. I mean, what was your takeaway, I guess, from Mahomes in his first playoff performance?
I was impressed. I'll tell you why. There's a couple factors. Number one, People, you need to understand the Colts were arguably the best football team on the planet. I'm not kidding. They could even beat at Clemson since October 15th. Bill Barnwell wrote about this a couple weeks ago going into that game. The Colts going into this game were 11-1 in their last 12. They'd outscored teams by more than anybody in the NFL over that period. The Colts were playing really well. The Colts were really young. The Colts were fast in some certain places. You know, T.Y. Hilton maybe slowed down a little bit, but the Colts had the mojo. That's why that game opened up and the line started to creep toward the Colts. A lot of people felt the Colts were the team that you did not want to play. And within 10 minutes of that game, it was 14-0, and the Chiefs had completely changed the equation. I'm showing a little bit of a confidence in the Chiefs here, but part of that is the fact that I think that they already slayed one of the big dragons, which is that the team that you did not want to play based on current form was the Indianapolis Colts. You know, the other thing I'll say about the Chiefs is this. Patrick Mahomes, I heard your friend Dominic Foxworth, I'll call him my friend too. I'll call him my acquaintance. Dominic Foxworth said on Get Up This Morning that the thing about Patrick Mahomes is he's never had a bad game. That sounds silly.
That's crazy. It's true.
And yet
I
looked it up.
It's just crazy.
Patrick Mahomes' worst game, his worst game by QBR, so let's put all the decisions together, was a 62.8. That's good. That's just a good NFL player. His worst game was the 12-9 game against the Ravens, a game in which that's a really, really, really good defense. Wink Martindale's defense was really good, as everybody knows. He threw for 377 yards. Patrick Mahomes, yes, he's thrown a few picks this season, but his ability to reduce bad decisions or at least minimize bad decisions and make enough splash plays, whether he's throwing left-handed or around his back or any other new arm angle he invents this week, it's really astonishing. It's interesting to go into a game and just say of the two high variance quarterbacks, obviously the sample size on Patrick Mahomes is really small. It's essentially one season. But the variance right now, if you want to get nerdy, like, he just doesn't bottom out. There's enough great plays in there. And by the way, there's enough great players just to get the ball to in space, up to and including a brilliant tight end, probably the best tight end in this game if you're going on current form. That's not a troll. He just has a lot going for him. They get a starting guard back this week who can also operate on you. Yes.
He's obviously the best tight end in the NFL, right?
Yeah, but you know, I mean,
Kittle's.
There's Hall of Fame status, which Gronk has. I think Gronk is arguably the best tight end in the history of the NFL.
I'm talking
this weekend. Kelsey's obviously in better form, and a lot of that's just health. But yes, I mean, there's just a lot going on in the favor of the Chiefs right now, which makes it a great, you know, make your case for the Patriots, Mina. I'm really interested. Well,
yeah, I mean, the Chiefs can beat you a million ways. And going into this, you know, in the last game, we should have seen that it was going to be a Kelsey game, right? Given the weaknesses of the Colts defense. They had struggled all year defending tight ends. Malik Hooker was out. I don't know if this will be a Kelsey game, because the Patriots are actually pretty good at defending tight ends. I've been praising the Patriots secondary a lot the last half of the season, and I think you saw that a lot in the playoff.
Good reason.
However, the Chiefs can beat you a million ways, which is kind of what you're saying. They're just so multiple. And
Patrick Mahomes, special teams, by the way.
Oh, yeah, 100%. They have that edge as well. And Mahomes, like, your point about, like, the low variance is really, it manifests itself both statistically and with the eye test in that he will win many different styles of games. And I think that was one of my takeaways from the Colts game. You know, he had a couple of, like, those insane sidearm passes that we all marveled at. But for the most part, he was just really efficient.
Yep.
And, you know, and he can do that. And so I'm curious to see how this Patriots defense with you know, and before the Chargers game, I praised the secondary. I sort of trashed the pass rush. And they proved me wrong. But I think they were really, really laid the pressure on Rivers, especially in the first half. They played a bunch of cover zero and just went at him. Mm-hmm. Now, the Chargers offensive line is significantly worse than the Chiefs offensive line, which is getting back Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
Call him the doctor.
The doctor. I don't know if he'll play, but I thought that was interesting. And Mahomes is very different from Philip Rivers, because if you pressure him up the middle like that, dude's just going to leak out, right? Yep. So it's just much more, even as better as the Patriots defense has been than I think people think, and as great as, by the way, Dante Hightower looked really awesome last weekend, and he's going to be key in this game. It's just such a different animal. And wow, we're talking about this, and now you asked me to make a case for the Patriots, but I think I just made a case for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I know this. The Patriots are incredible. They have an incredible run. I really do think that Andy Reid is a kind of a famously underrated coach. He, you know, somebody joked that, you know, he has all these playoff losses. He's also now sixth all time in playoff wins. His Super Bowl loss came to the Patriots, a 3-point game. He's had some bad breaks in the postseason, and he's done it with Donovan McNabb, who is good for about a 3 to 4 year period, and Alex Smith, who he literally revived. I think Andy Reid, for all his strengths and all his faults, finally has a quarterback that can kind of transcend the game a little bit, where you get points where they didn't exist before. And by the way, he's got at least, you know, that 3 to 4 man pass rush, that allows him to do some things without taking so many chances. I really like the position they're in. The weather.
You're picking the Chiefs.
The weather. Yes, I like the Chiefs, and I don't even. Ooh. The other thing about this Patriots defense, I don't think this Patriots defense is wildly different than the one that I've seen in the last two Super Bowls. The one I've seen in the last two Super Bowls against pretty good offensive teams, one that was quarterbacked by Nick Foles, is a team that can give up 40 points. And they need a great deal of offense to win. I'm concerned about the Patriots offense on the road against a really fired up Kansas City defense that doesn't really need to get out of its base, to be somewhat effective. So we'll see.
Wow. You know, you got me changing my mind.
Hell of a sell.
All right. Before we get to the second game, which is actually the first game, as always, going to take a few quick questions from readers.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
I keep saying readers, Chris, because I'm so used to being a writer, and they're not readers, they're listeners. Anyways, I read, though, your questions, and I will always read the questions. If you leave a positive iTunes review with a question, I will do my best to get to it.
It's
first question is, is that what they call it? Yeah, it's like a sell. Yeah.
Nice bribe.
Mikey from Dallas sent me a long question. He was upset about the Cowboys starting field position, was wondering about the correlation between successful teams and field position. You can get these statistics on Football Outsiders, Mikey from Dallas, under offensive drive stats. So I pulled them for you. You go to line of scrimmage per drive. The Cowboys, your suspensions were correct. They are not great. They're about 20th. Not the worst. The best teams, Chris, who do you think has the best starting field position of any team in the NFL?
Rams.
Rams are third. It's the Saints. So
well, there you go.
Yes,
good teams.
It does help. Good
but
teams.
Also play special teams.
Stan 341 asks, what does it mean when the first drive is scripted and why don't they do it the whole game? I think that started with Bill Walsh, right? Off the top of my head.
Yeah, that makes sense. Usually people talk about scripting the first 15 plays. You build in a high degree of ideally success rate, which means you're expected to get, if it's first down, you get an X amount of yards, call it 5, depending on the system. But scripting a lot, as Mina said, teams script and then smart coaches make adjustments. Doesn't mean you won't go back to plays that worked really well in the script. Ask Sean McVay. The guy runs the same personnel all game. They run a lot of stuff out of the same kind of formations. And then, you know, there's also you could have one play scripted, but when the guy goes to the line and yells kill, he might be running to a different side. It's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Call
and you know, you get our Seahawks, brilliant scripted run. Really good. Yeah, they don't do that. But if you're looking for coaches who script brilliant drives, you can't really do better than Andy Reid. Just his first drives are a thing of beauty, and they have been all season. Spirit Banner 1982 asks, who do you think has the best throwback unis? Ooh. Okay. I'm trying to get through these quickly, so I don't want to spend a ton of time.
The Rams all whites are pretty awesome. Just the straight white and blue.
I was going to say the Rams, you know, when they went back to the royal blue. I'm going to go away from the Rams and the I really love the Eagles throwbacks.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
The Kelly green is really, really dope. D-Web 9314, I think, asks, ooh, this is a fun one. This is tough, actually. Would you rather start a team with Dak or Mitchell Trubisky? Obviously, we're setting aside, you know, contract and all of that and just talking talent. I think they're really similar, Chris.
Give me Dak, just because he has he has at least one NFL season with really good passing numbers. Trubisky has one really good NFL season by QBR with such a ridiculously extraordinary amount of the value coming from his legs. Shout out to Josh Allen. That you still really, the jury is still really out on Trubisky as a passer that can get two and three reads in and really carve up a team. Dak at least has a little bit of a sample size. Give Dak a better tight end situation. I don't know. There's something there.
I don't know. I heard during the playoff game from Chris Collinsworth that Mitch Trubisky was phenomenal, I think was the word he used.
I'm ask anybody inside on this campus. I'm a Trubisky fan, and I've been relentless in calling him Mr. Biscuit since that's on his college bio, and I'm obsessive about reading college bios. But yes, Mr. the talented Mr. Biscuit, I do like him. I just think based on sample size, give me Dak right now.
Such a crime that Mitch Trubisky wasn't paired with Bruce Arians for that reason alone. JK2C asks, what's your favorite album from 2018? I really like the band Low. They have a new album. Go check it out. It's very depressing if you like depressing music like me.
Was that album named after a Cracker song, Low?
It is named after a point score that probably won't happen in this game. That is a professional segue. Rams at Saints. All right.
Dude, you need to hit the Marlboro Reds hard if you want to pull that off.
So there was a week where I was sick and I sounded so awesome that I momentarily questioned whether I should try to be sick for the rest of my ESPN career. My voice sounded
incredible. I don't know. Is anybody in the talent office telling you to get on a pack-a-day plan? Because you could there get must, there, kid.
There must be like something you can do to your voice to always have like it probably is smoking.
Maybe like a vape alternative.
There's this Twitter meme going around that's like, name something from your childhood that younger people from a younger generation wouldn't understand. And a lot of people about my age or older have pointed out that you could just smoke when we were a kid. Like, people just smoked all the time, and you don't really see that anymore. Let's bring it back. Let's not bring it back. Speaking of bringing it back, the Rams offense looked a lot like the Rams offense from the first half of this season. So I want to start on that side of the ball, Chris, and talk about what you saw from the Rams and McVay in this Cowboys game. What I saw was a Dallas defense that had no idea what was happening on like half of the plays. And when we talk about the Rams offense and what we do well, I think it's very important. You mentioned earlier that they obviously have a very simple use of personnel, right? And they're very consistent, and they continue to be consistent. But because of that simplicity, there's this constant deception, and you really saw that in this game. And it doesn't come just from running it or trickery, you know, the jet sweeps and stuff, which were really effective in this game. It doesn't come from Jared Goff being effective. It doesn't come from the offensive line just creating massive holes for Gurley and CJ Anderson. It comes from all of those things happening together, in my opinion. And I thought this was like the perfect culmination. This Cowboys game to me was like, that is the Rams offense in its ideal form.
You know, it was really interesting because the Rams won this game. The leading rusher was CJ Anderson. That's like, you know, that's like trolling. And by the way, this shows you what great offenses that can actually block, that have a great deal of confidence in their quarterback, can do. The Kansas City Chiefs didn't have Kareem Hunt, as we all know. They were able to run the ball against a Colts team that's, for the most part, been able to stop it for about 10 straight weeks now. Yeah. And the Los Angeles Rams went out there and ran the ball effectively. Again, CJ Anderson, 23 carries, 123 yards. By the way, CJ Anderson wasn't popping off a 60-yard carry to pad those stats. CJ Anderson's long was 15 yards, and I believe he covered that in about 8 seconds. So this was a success rate kind of masterpiece from the Los Angeles Rams, where they were not gashing the Cowboys. The Cowboys were playing reasonably effective defense, and they were just getting beat with blocking, runs at 5, 6, 7 yards at a time. Todd Gurley, by the way, 16 carries, 7 fewer than C.J. Anderson, 115 yards, had one long, a 35-yarder. So you got a little bit more of that big play element out of Gurley. Shocker. But this was kind of a masterclass. And, hey, by the way, we're a physical football team, too, from Sean McVay. And, again, this is what you talk about when you talk about these great offenses, where they're explosive, but they're multiple, and they can get very unexplosive and successful when they need to. C.J. Anderson, I mean, that's a case in point right there, Mina.
Yeah, that he was able to do that, of all people. I love the troll point is really good, because it does feel like they could just keep going down the line and getting increasingly improbable running backs. Largely because, again, the blocking, amazing. And in this offensive line, they were fantastic. They fell off a little bit during the bad stretch for the Rams, especially on the inside. Andrew Whitworth, who was freaking ridiculous in this game, by the way. On that Todd Gurley touchdown, the long one, he blocked like many dudes. But a lot of it comes from confusion and deception. And like, these Cowboys linebackers have been awesome all season. LVE, beast, right? Jaylon. Yeah. They looked baffled half of this game. I don't know if you saw that, and we saw obviously that final bootleg run from Goff when Jeff Heath just bit hard. All of those things were set up by the play calling throughout the game. And right afterwards, I think some Seahawks fans asked me, well, like, how come they could do it against the Cowboys and the Seahawks couldn't? Chris Carson averaged 0.23 yards before contact in that wild card game.
Yeah.
Do you know how many yards Todd Gurley averaged before first contact?
32.
5.75.
Same thing.
Before being touched. C.J. Anderson, who they had, you know, out of goal line running stuff, 3.22. That is bonkers, okay? And it concerns me against a Saints defense that just lost its best run defender in Sheldon Rankins. Super concerning. Just given the matchup, do you feel like it's going to be a very similar performance from the Rams?
You called it. The first note I wrote down, when you mentioned that we were going to talk about these games sometime last night, since I didn't have time to prepare, I wrote down loss of Sheldon Rankins is a big deal. I went all caps on big. So in your voice, I'd say loss of Sheldon Rankins is a big deal. Arguably their best run defender. I looked at it again, going back through some of the numbers. Now, he was their best run defender, period. They signed Tyron Walker. What's Tyron Walker been doing? Well, he was cut by the Bills in September. And he's been, hopefully, doing some clean and presses since then. So Tyron Walker is there. The interior of the Rams defensive line changed appreciably on Sunday. And it sucks, but it's just the reality. So yeah, I really do think that if you're just looking at this team and you're the Rams, you're going to take your shots there. I also think you got to remember the Rams have kind of been, at once they were trying to run the ball effectively against Dallas, they were also trying to rest Todd Gurley at the same time, and they kind of did. C.J. Anderson ran the ball 23 times, Gurley 16, so they didn't. Even in a game where they pounded the ball, they ran the ball 48 times. Gurley got exactly a third of those. I do think he should be a little bit more fresh going into the game. I think the Rams have the ability to run the ball. And remember, the Rams got down, 35-14 or 35-17 in the game when they played in the Superdome before. They're gonna want to hold on to the ball a little bit more. They came back and tied that game. They had a chance to win that game. I believe the Saints went ahead, and then, you know, late in the fourth quarter, then Michael Thomas toasted Marcus Peters to kind of seal it. That was a close game with 6-7 minutes left in that game. It was a tie game. But this is a different Rams offense now, I think, in the sense that their confidence in running the ball against the Saints, and it's certainly a different Saints defense.
Tlaib was out in that game, by the way, which I think will be
they can move some things around.
Pretty significant. Yeah, I'm very curious. I mean, the Saints offense, you know, what we saw in the first game was basically Michael Thomas, right?
Yes.
I think Breeze to Thomas right now is the most potent quarterback wide receiver. Just Tyreek Hill's harder to defend in some ways, right? Because he's just such a physical marvel. And we didn't really talk about that with versus the Patriots man, but like I'm very curious to see how they handle him. Because you saw in that first game that Pats had Gilmore just go one-on-one on Keenan Allen. But again, Tyreek Hill, very, very different case. But Michael Thomas, so Drew Brees, he's so perfect for Brees because of what Brees does now and who he is as a quarterback in 2019, which is he don't throw deep.
Yep.
Okay, like, it's not going to happen. At this point, I think that's – it used to be a thing that was kind of whispered about, oh, can Brees really? He can't.
By the way, even the way they're in, the way you know that is by the way they're using Ted Ginn. Ginn's not catching the ball 50 yards down the field, when instead Ted Ginn is catching, you know, crossers and things like that, and they're trying to use his speed in a different way, there's your tell.
Yes. And, I mean, if they have a Hail Mary, Taysom Hill's throwing it, right? Like, no question. But speaking of trolls, Taysom Hill, the human embodiment of trolling, but, Brees is still extremely efficient, accurate, anticipatory in the short and a slightly degree less intermediate areas of the field, and that's where Michael Thomas eats. So I think the Saints secondary has improved a lot. They were very good against the Eagles. I mean, Eli Apple in particular was excellent, wouldn't you say? And Lattimore obviously had the huge game-changing plays. I thought Von Bell was very good. I wrote his name a few times. What do you think? I guess, do you think this is going to be a similar Saints offense? Is it going to be a combination of trying to establish, you know, a strong run-pass balance early on plus Michael Thomas? Or do you think they're going to try something different against this Rams defense that's been sort of up and down all season?
I think the Saints are going to, through a combination of runs and quick throws, this is nothing new across the NFL, including Kansas City, they need to find ways to get the ball out of Breeze's hand, either by turning around and handing it to somebody or swinging it out to Kamara or getting some rhythm offense really quickly. Because I'll tell you what, if there was something that kind of defined, the uphill battle that game was for the New Orleans Saints against the Eagles, where your home favorites, 8-point favorites, you get down 14-0. I mean, they were climbing back into that game the entire time. And to your point about the way their offense works, they weren't just able to take these huge chunk plays. The problem was, and it's something we discussed with Kansas City and New England, Philadelphia was able to gain pressure with their front four. I got a real problem right now with the idea of Andres Pete being even at all partly responsible for slowing down Aaron Donald with a broken hand.
Yeah.
That sounds terrifying to me. Donald, again, young legs in the playoffs, that's why I thought the Colts were dangerous, is terrifying. Donald is the personification of a dude playing young man football. He's got 73 pressures this year, 20.5 sacks. Again, you say, oh, well, now you're going to double team him. At what point was he not being double teamed? He's double teamed 60%+ of the time. It doesn't matter. It just means somebody else is getting free. So I think the Saints have some of the problems that the New England Patriots do, and that I think it's going to be really difficult to slow down the interior of that Rams defensive line. Again, this is nothing new, but I think it's exacerbated by Pete's status. You know, I mean, the fact that Rankins is out and Pete is out, it really changes things, and which is, you know, ironic since we talk about these offenses like they're unstoppable. I do think they can be slowed down. I think it's going to be interesting because I do think the Saints, you know, that 18-play drive kind of personified where their offense is right now against like a decent defense where they can't just take it from you. They're going to have to work it. They're going to have to be efficient. And I do think some of the Rams have some of the tools to kind of slow those things down because it's not a whole heck of a lot different, maybe with better personnel than the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I think that's where I kind of differ because part of the reason the Rams were able to stop Ezekiel Elliott, which was one of the big surprises of the weekend, right? Like one was the Chiefs run defense and the other was the Rams run defense, which has not been good this year, was that they knew that Dallas's offense is fairly one-dimensional, right? Like if you commit to stopping the run, commit to stopping Zeke, it's not that hard to stop Dak Prescott, I think. And the Rams really committed to stopping the run, right? Like they were in their bare front frequently throughout the game. You saw the linebackers who I've criticized all season, Corey Littleton, in particular, he was excellent in stopping the run here. And this was probably Ndamukong Suh's best game as a Ram, I think. I don't think they can do that against Drew Brees and the Saints. And so I do think the Saints will be able to run on them just because of the sort of sheer allocation of resources is going to be so different. They're just such a vastly better offense than Dallas. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Brees picking on Marcus Peters somehow, trying to exploit his aggressiveness, which is something we've seen successful offenses do. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them go to the run early, despite the lack of success that Dallas had, I suppose. Peyton, it's funny because the Saints didn't really score that many points in the last game, but he was still so, it's called such an incredible game, and that drive in particular was amazing. I'm most excited about, like, this is two of the most aggressive coaches maybe we've seen meet in the playoffs in a long time. Both showed in the last round. Like, who do you think is going to out-aggress each other in the Peyton versus McVay battle?
I would think, I just think based on the way their offense works, I would think that, I would think that the Rams you're going to see is a team that looks like they're taking just a few more shots. But, these teams are pretty similar. You go back to all these coaching tropes. Based on the way these defenses are, the Rams actually do struggle against the run here and there, despite the presence of Donald and Sue. Statistically, they do struggle against the run, and that's, again, why you pointed out their performance against the Cowboys was so impressive and somewhat surprising. Zeke completely shut down, but these teams are going to want to run the ball against each other.
Yeah.
We know the Saints are going to do it. I think the Rams maximize Goff. They maximize the spaces he can throw into when they're able to run the ball. And certainly throw to their running back. So I think it's funny. You think about these teams and the way they score points. You think about them. You might go back to some old ideas of teams that really drive the ball down the field a lot. It's not really that. They're just really efficient. They block really well, and they just eliminate negative plays. And again, it gives them that opportunity to be aggressive. Look at this game situation. They're in a dome. The kickers are Will Lutz and Greg Zuerlein. Like, there's a real chance where you don't have more than like two or three punts in this game. And I'm not exaggerating because fourth and two, once these teams cross their 40, they're going for it. And once they cross the 50, they're pretty much in field goal range. So you have a game where it could be like a really well played offensive football game, and still end up like 24-21.
Who you got?
I'm going to go Rams.
Really?
I'm going to go Rams really close.
Ooh.
Based on two things. One, I just think that they're healthier. I think the Rankins and Pete to have massive, important players on the interior of your lines, either out or affected in this game is a big deal. I also think the Rams have played in the Super Bowl, the Super Dome, got punched and kind of responded. I don't think they're going to be completely in awe of that situation. And I just think Donald does something ridiculous. But yeah. Again, close. Give me the Lee Corso sound. Close. I think it's 27, 24, 24, 21.
I think this Saints defense, I think DeMario Davis, who was
most underrated
like
signing.
Yes, I said it in the offseason, and I kind of want him to have an amazing, huge play in this game solely so that I can pull that tweet of mine about how it's the most underrated. Because really all I care about is being right. I'm really struggling with this one. I'm leaning Saints just because I think the Rams defense is going to have trouble stopping them. I just think they're such a different animal from Dallas. But,
and by the way, like to even lean one way in either of these games, I'm not just completely patting us on the back as analysts. I mean, FPI, our Football Power Index, Vegas is saying that if all four of these teams showed up on a field in Omaha tomorrow, just a straight neutral field situation, they're literally within like 1.5 points of each other in point spreads. I mean, it's an astonishing setup where you have these four teams that, yeah, sure, somebody's going to win a game by 10 points. A defensive scorer could make that the case. But in terms of just like raw layout, you're talking about legit coin flip situations. You're talking about home teams favored by 3 points when we know that just being at home means 3 points. It's saying that these are evenly matched teams, and it's super fun. It's why you talk about like an injury to a guy like Sheldon Rankins as a deciding factor,
right?
When that sounds preposterous at face, but we're looking for little edges here.
Did you know I was born in Omaha?
Omaha.
You do now. Omaha, off at Air Force Base.
France.
Well, we're going to learn a little bit about you, Chris Sproul, with the final segment.
Oh, this is,
and now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
First question. Who's your favorite coaching hire? Head coach.
In the NFL?
No, the CFL.
Well, that would be Jim Trestman, obviously. The NFL so far this offseason, Freddie Kitchens.
I love the Freddie Kitchens hire. Me too. I love the staff, man. Like,
Yeah. How's this? Steve
so
Wilkes.
Fun.
Steve Wilkes is a great coaching hire because, again, only in the NFL can a guy be literally the hottest name on the entire market, coach a team with a rookie quarterback who struggled, and get fired, and suddenly he was like, oh, okay, he needs to like serve purgatory right now. How does that exist? Only in the NFL.
And Monken, too. Huge Monken fan here. Second question. Are you watching The Bachelor?
I've started. I mean, you lost me. It's he's working out some things, and she might have her first kiss.
This is why you got to just get me
straight to paradise, Mina. I want some people that already have their flaws fully exposed, and let's get to work here.
Do you know what I call paradise? Bachelor Red Zone?
Yeah, exactly.
Question three.
Inside the 5-yard line, more like it.
This is a tough one. If you could build a team around two players in the NFL right now, who would they be? I know mine.
Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Donald.
Gosh darn it, that was mine. Okay, other than Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Donald.
Just from offense, maybe like Patrick Mahomes and Michael Thomas. Just from defense, probably Khalil Mack. I don't think people realize Khalil Mack, like how versatile he is. I remember watching Khalil Mack. I was in the stadium when he was at Buffalo at Ohio State, and Ohio State was so smart. They did this stuff that like made Khalil Mack, like they put him out in coverage, and even then he was a good player. He's just gifted in terms of just his ability to play football.
And so young too. I mean, Khalil Mack he's turning 28. Okay. Well, and that's ancient in bachelor years.
He's also got a good jump shot.
What is the best food to eat during football games?
I don't know. I make like a ridiculous macaroni and cheese. I don't know.
You don't do wings? You're not a wing guy?
No, I there's not really any food that I don't like, so.
There's not any food you don't like. I like wings. I mean, they're a little messy. I really love chicken tenders with like honey mustard sauce, but then I think it was two seasons ago, I was getting them every day and Seattle was losing, so I stopped eating them, and then Seattle started winning, and I haven't done chicken tenders during football since.
I also really like dips of all kinds, because dips you can basically eat for 4 straight hours and never truly quantify the amount that you've eaten. That's awesome. You can get like 4,000 calories and be like, yeah, I've just kind of been, you know, picking.
That's true. I never think of dips counting as like when you eat a buffalo wing and it's like basically a vehicle for blue cheese. It's probably, I don't even want to think about that. All right. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny, my dog. Lenny did a little bit of research on you and found out that you have a dog named Brutus.
Yes.
Brutus is a schnauzer or something?
Schnoodle.
A schnoodle.
A schnauzer poodle mix. They're hypoallergenic.
Also recently had a baby son, so I think his question is touching on this topic. As always, I will honor his request. Well, not as always. As of the return to his voice has happened. Chris! That's funny. Who do you like better, Brutus or your baby?
Wow. I really like Brutus, so much so that he was flown to us at LaGuardia Airport. But I'll go Evan with a 6.5-point spread.
Wait. Brutus was flown to you?
Yeah, he came from a litter kind of far away, and we could either drive like an entire day to get him or, he wasn't a rescue. I know it's not cool, but it was an allergy situation, and so we were just trying to get the right dog. But yeah, I'll go Evan. Evan minus 6.5 right now.
Does Brutus know anything about football?
Yeah, and he's been.
Does he have a podcast?
You know, both of them have been taught to lead with their head, hat on the ball. Yeah, they know a lot about football.
Well, if we have you back on, will you bring Brutus, and does he have a voice?
He does have a voice, and it's like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good maybe like Pete from Mad Men.
Oh, really? Ooh.
Yeah, he's a little sketch.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Chris. Next time, bring Brutus.
I will.